Good morning, everyone, and welcome to today's webinar on fixing customer data foundations for good. Thank you very much for joining us. I'm Stuart Russell, Chief Strategy Officer at Plinc. I'm joined by my colleague, Graham Burton, Chief Technology Officer. But more importantly, we're joined today by Stephen Moriarty, Head of Customer Data and Insight for Crew Clothing. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning. How are you?
Very well. Thank you very much for joining us.
No problem at all.
Yeah. So, well, I'm pleased to say that Crew Clothing is a valued Plinc client and user of Unalize, our customer data platform. Stephen's a highly experienced data professional with 15 years of experience in retail, and previous to his time at Crew, has worked with brands such as M&M Direct and Dixon's Carphone Warehouse. So perfectly placed to help us talk through today's conversation. So, for those of you who are joining our first webinar, Plinc is a customer data business and specialist. We deliver customer data platform technology and marketing services. And our vision is to create a place where every business can use all their customer data to make every decision and interaction better. And that mission, that vision guides everything we do in our product development and how we deliver our marketing services, and I think is super important for the viewpoint that we're offering today. From today's session, we've got a lot to cover and hopefully a really exciting conversation that's going to resonate with the attendees today. We'll be exploring a range of areas. We obviously want to define what a fit for purpose, future-proofed customer data asset is. And we want to show the use cases that that will enable. So what will a future-proof customer data platform unlock? Most importantly, we'll be talking about what to expect or what you should be looking for when selecting or building your solution. There's a myriad of options out there, a range of different approaches, but we feel there are a number of key lookouts that we would like to focus on to help you guide through your development and selection process. We want to touch on the potential outcomes and upsides. So what should you expect from a fixed data foundation? And we also want to raise the concept of and the potential of a use case approach. Can we start developing fixed data assets use case by use case? Please ask questions throughout. We've got a Q&A tab that you should be able to access, so please access that and drop in questions when you see fit, and we'll be sure to leave some time at the end to answer anything as they come through. So just a little background, what it is we're talking about today. When we talk about a fixed data asset, a fit for purpose, future-proofed customer platform, what we're talking about is a full continuous 360 customer view that is fully activated. And what we mean by that is, by full, we mean all data going into a connected view. We're talking about it being continuous, so consistently updated with behaviors and transactions to give marketers the most recent view of customer behavior. And then being fully activated, we mean that data is then integrated into the touch points that matter. So marketing touch points to drive great channel communications, as well as internal business intelligence solutions to drive analysis. So that's where we think businesses should be. And I think it's long stood to be an accepted norm that this is the right approach and that there's a tremendous amount of value to be gained by developing this. However, the market has some way to go. We did some research at the back end of last year where we surveyed several hundred B2C customer marketing leaders. We asked them about the state of their customer data, and the responses we felt really backed up a lot of the conversations that are happening out there in the market right now. And just to give you some sense of where businesses have to go, we asked the respondents how confident they were that they had a fully formed continuous 360 customer view. Less than a third strongly agreed. And then when we actually dug a little deeper to understand what data was going into those platforms, only 23%, for example, thought offline purchase history was being brought in, and just 20% were matching customer level web behavior data into that platform. So if you accept that probably a fully formed 360 customer view needs that data, then actually much less than a third of businesses have that fit for purpose data asset. And then when we went a little bit further to understand how that data set was being used and how accessible and updated it was, 50% of respondents said that their core data platform that drove and informed their marketing was updated weekly or less frequently. And only 18% said they could easily access all their customer data. So there is some massive challenge around data accessibility, data connectivity, and also the latency of data, which is really hamstringing, making marketers hamstrung when it comes to meeting their objectives. So it's becoming increasingly apparent that fixing this status quo is a key play for 24. And throughout all the conversations we're having out in the market, at events and conferences and our own forums, marketers are really setting the stall out saying 24 is the year that they're going to get this sorted. And it's the year that they're going to start fixing the cause of challenges, the things that are preventing them from meeting their goals, rather than simply treating the symptoms. And I think that's been the default option for a number of brands over the years. It's the proliferation of point solutions, which brands are onboarding to fix certain parts of their challenges, which is then creating more of a data mess and more challenges. This is the year where brands are really looking to address the core issue. But they're doing it against a backdrop where all investments need to realize a fast ROI, which is a really interesting tension. It's been long held to believed that to fix data challenges, to create a fit for purpose data platform is a big investment with a lot of time required. That doesn't necessarily carry against this need for quick ROI, which many brands are having to honor in relatively tough trading conditions. So there's quite an interesting tension there, and I think we're looking to explore that in a bit more detail today. So let's get into the conversation. And we want to start off by looking at the key use cases that a fit for purpose fixed data platform can solve. And I think for the purposes of today's conversation, we've netted them down into three key areas. Should be able to drive efficient and accurate analysis and insight. So more insight being generated faster and increasingly democratized across the business. So more people having more access to that insight. There's the concept of optimizing audiences, so improving targeting with smarter audiences to drive more relevancy and more efficiencies. And then, of course, there's personalization. And from our perspective, the marketers that are talking to us are coming to us with one or more of these areas, which feels like a great point to bring you, Stephen, to the conversation. Let's talk through your perspective on these. Maybe we can start off with a subject that I know is very close to your heart, analysis and insight. What does good look like here? What does a great data platform that is fully formed enable?
Well, that's a good question. I suppose the way to, because different arms of the business will want different things from a data platform, definitely in terms of insight. With Crew, interestingly, for a long time, Crew have known everything there is to know about the product, but what they haven't known is kind of beyond the cart. So beyond that experience of what that what that transaction, what this customer looks like. And good insight actually takes it away from that and goes beyond that. So when you democratize data, it's not just looking at the product, but it's going almost a holistic view of which customers are buying it, why they're buying it, democratizing it to extent, and also the halo effect of having this data and how it can go back to the product. So good is an interesting question because I think if you ask different parts of the business, good to them would be looking at something in particular. For me, a good view, especially with insight, is to have almost a holistic view. So you're looking from almost from a product up to customer, and almost so then from a customer down to product, just to understand what these looks like and all the nuances that are in there. But for me, it's storytelling. So it's taking data and giving it to stakeholders in a way that they've never seen it before. And I think that's how you get people to adopt data-driven decisions, is by actually taking these data points that have always been in the business, but no one's really joined them and put them all together before, and telling really interesting stories.
The data democratization idea is really interesting, isn't it? So a lot of people talk about that, and it's a key notion underneath this customer first mantra. And I've always been very impressed with Crew. It's something that you've talked about, and I think you walk the walk with it as well. It really is a way of creating insight, threading it through the business, informing all areas. And you talk about, businesses sitting on the data but not necessarily connecting it. What typically are the data sources that kind of go under the radar that you find really important and valuable to that journey?
Well, there's so much to speak of. There's especially for Crudefood, and we're probably going to go into this. It's built on bricks and mortar first, or traditionally. So there's 100 stores, and there's all this offline data that needs to come in. The e-commerce side has grown exponentially since COVID, which there's probably a lot of people on this call would say exactly the same things happened to them, their business or their sectors. And then there's all the engagement, and there's all the event pieces that sit in between all of this, so between all the transactions. And traditionally, what I found before was there was kind of a disjoint between kind of the transactions, the merch reports, and then kind of the customer reports. So even though that data, what does all sit together and does aggregate up, people are telling different stories just by looking at it in a different way. Actually, when you've got it joined, and some of the best people I've worked with, or some of the best business I've worked with, have had a maturity in data thinking, and actually know that it tells one story together rather than it being siloed to just look, we sold X of these yesterday. Some businesses, like I say, super mature, have looked beyond that and said, actually, if we've sold X of these yesterday, this is also very good for the business going forward, because the propensity to then come back is higher if a customer buys into this category or into this product. And it's just looking outside, like I say, looking beyond the cart and just looking at the product, even though understanding product is still super important to Crew and kind of what the business has been built on.
Yeah, I love the idea of looking beyond the cart and understanding the customer. I mean, presumably you've got a very far-reaching mandate, lots of elements of insight that you're generating for the business, but understanding the customer, super important. And I guess some of the key data sets are really interesting for that. And then sometimes are perhaps on the peripheral of fully formed views, things like, customer experience and things like that. I mean, they sometimes get sidelined as data points, but presumably really, really important for you.
Yeah, it's super important. And again, it goes back to a more holistic view of just looking at things, taking everything into account, and understanding what a good customer's got, like CSAT score. What can that do to a customer in terms of their loyalty, or being advocated to a business, or a detractor, and if the experience isn't good at all. So it's joining all them points together. Because again, as you rightly say, if you've got a great experience with a brand, in terms of how you've transacted or how you've been treated, you'll more than likely always go back to them. So if you don't look at all these points, not just beyond the transaction, what do we do afterwards in terms of logistically, and did we make sure the product was exactly what the customer was expecting? So you've got to put all these data points together to get that full rounded view of the experience, rather than just, in this session, the customer did this, or when the customer came to the store, this is how they transacted. It's far more reaching than that.
I guess the digital data is super important. I mean, as I mentioned very quickly at the start, the brands really seem to be struggling matching digital engagement data. So what customers are browsing online, which is, incredibly powerful signals and incredibly important for analysis purposes. I mean, presumably that's becoming valuable to you and what you're looking to do to anticipate customers' demand and customer interactions and so on.
Absolutely. And it goes back as well to the modeling, because the modeling, if it's solely based on just transactional data, you're missing a big part of what's going on in the customer experience. So adding all of that engagement data, that digital engagement data, to a model, is super important, and not just being stuck, because what you can do then is be in perpetual cycles of just always being in this model and always going to buy into this category or into this product, because we're not seeing the full view of a customer is actually come to the site and that has actually looked at something else, or is not behaving the way the model predicted. So therefore, taking these data points in is super important.
And I guess one last point on this, we can't talk about models and predicting without just getting the AI conversation out there. At its root, AI is a form of analysis, industrializing the insight into customers and automating some of that. Clearly that needs that rooted data foundation.
And I go back, and I said the same thing with COVID. It was the business that really flourished in COVID was the businesses that were data mature and data literate, And I think the exactly same thing's going to hold true for AI, Gen AI. It's going to be the businesses that are early adopters will are the ones that can make kind of the impossible possible, will be the ones that are already data mature and have their data in one place or joined or unified. And therefore will also know when there's any hallucination or there's any issue because they know their data inside out and they've got a point of reference. Well, I think it becomes extremely hard to have, if you're not having a full rounded view of your data or an understanding of it, to understand when the responses you're getting to prompts or whatever it might be you're using is not what you expect it to be.
Yeah, absolutely. Very interesting. So we've actually had a question come through that I think is really relevant to this, and maybe Graham, I can come to you on this. There's a question on combining customer data with product and the big changes that you can enact with this. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, certainly, I think from, you know, when we bring it back to the use case of analysis and insight, I think the requirements that we're seeing is really that full complete view. So a full complete, certainly you have customer data, and actually you look at customer data itself. What a customer is, it can be anything from a cash transactor to an anonymous cookie on the website, right through to a known individual. And from the customer perspective, actually making sure that your analysis and insight can, depending on the requirement, can tap into each of it. So how many products I sold is everybody, but then when you want to slice and dice by the customer lens, then absolutely, you know, you're focusing in on a smaller group of the base, and you're platform needs to be able to understand and it sort of flip between the two. But ultimately, what we are seeing is that bringing other types of data in is really key. So product data, as an example, is a really good one, where we think about products, all of the different attributes, the images you have on products. Those images can, with AI now, we can tag those images and create lots of other attributes that specifically relate to product that actually can provide another very interesting lens from an insight and reporting perspective. But they're also really important for AI models as well. You know, AI is what can then industrialize all of that and convert all of those additional attributes into some actionable output. So product data definitely, and much more granular, and product data is a really valuable additional dimension on your analysis and insights in addition to customer. You know, and another really interesting one as well is store information. So again, we think about a data platform. It's not just about known customers, having information on the footfall that come into a store. So we can't attribute that to an individual, but again, from an analysis and insight perspective, can be very, very powerful. We have this particular store over here where we have lots of people coming in, but they're not necessarily transacting compared to what our average is. You know, let's do something about it. The where certain clients really are looking for their analysis and insight platforms to be able to deliver that type of output. So again, that's another example where it's maybe not traditional customer level data, but is really valuable to bring into that single environment.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, just another thought. We're talking quite a lot about pre-campaign or pre-activity analysis. I guess, Graham, there's a view on post-campaign analysis as well, right? So what happens after the event of communications? It's becoming increasingly important for marketers to validate the performance of their campaigns as quickly as possible. And the last click revenue metric, you know, doesn't go far enough. We need to know about who's just responding and where and how and in what category. It feels like the data platform, if it's being fixed, needs to be able to accommodate that type of insight as well.
I mean, absolutely, it should be a given. I mean, ultimately, to be able to go on and talk about the other use cases we'll come on to, you need that closed loop on the insight, and that is about measuring the incremental benefit from your campaigns. And ultimately, to your point, it's all of the same dimensions that we've just talked about are dimensions that we want to look into to campaign results by as well. So overall, a campaign drove X, but actually, when we split it by this customer dimension, we see it works better for one group rather than another. Or we split it by some of that great product data that you might have, and actually, you see that the campaign's working really hard in a certain area of your catalog, but not necessarily across the breadth of it. And again, it's ultimately the foundation to be able to achieve that type of reporting, and ultimately create more actionable optimization off the back of campaign results is being able to have that data in the one place so that you can actually undertake that type of activity.
Excellent. Thank you. So I guess looking at that second use case, audience optimization, I mean, these are huge subjects. They're webinars in their own right. But Stephen, from your perspective, if we're thinking about optimizing the targeting of our communications cross channel and, you know, all the channels that many retailers like yourself are using, from a DM, email, other channels, why is a fully connected view that is, you know, fit for purpose so important for what brands are trying to achieve in that particular use case just now?
Well, I think it follows on perfectly from the first point, which is the analysis and insight, because it's always why are you segmenting, why are you creating cohorts, for what reason are you doing this? And generally, shouldn't be a gut feel; it should be a data-driven decision. And a data-driven decision will come from having your data all in one 360 view, rounded view, from the insights that come from that. I mean, audiences. I've been building audiences for 15 years, so it's one thing that I'm quite passionate about is audience. And I've worked with some amazing people that have kind of looked at it from a different lens, be it in data science or data analysts, or even just if they work in within that channel or within that campaign or whatever that might be. And I think it's always great to be curious, and it's always good to start with that why, because when you create an audience or you're creating a campaign. There's the old school way was to just almost send it to everyone if you took email, for example, or a catalog, or but actually, when you've got this data in one place, you can go really granular. You can really decide almost to the minutiae of what it is that you're looking for within that. And that's not treating everyone the same. And we're going to get into personalization, but this is a key point to personalization, is you cannot personalize to everyone. There's customers within your base where it's the right thing to do based on where they are in their life cycle. And there's some customers where personalization, because the data you hold on them isn't enough, or they've only transacted with you once, or it was a long, long time ago. So splitting that audience is vital to your kind of end goal. And also, you don't want to skew your results. So splitting your audience at the beginning, that should be the first point. You should come from data and insight actually into audiences and go, why am I selecting this audience? What is it for? And it can't always be to transact, because that's, you know, only X percent of the base are going to transact at any given time. So it's understanding where customers are in their life cycle, which a database or a 360 view will definitely, or a CDP would definitely give you that view of that. And the big one for me is understanding when to exclude customers, not just include them, is exclude customers. Don't treat all customers the same. And don't spend exactly the same marketing spend on all customer groups.
Yeah, I was going to say that's not just a customer experience perspective. That's a business efficiency. If you come into things like paid media and DM, the more expensive channels, being able to target and create audience or orchestrate audiences across the various channels in a way that is highly efficient for both the business and relevant for the customer is incredibly important and requires that joined up view and for it to be activated.
Absolutely.
Graham, have you any additional perspectives on that?
Yeah, no, I think probably 2 points from an audience perspective. I mean, ultimately, as we look to bring all of this data together into one place, you know, the questions then become, where do I start in terms of, you know, I can slice and dice that base in lots of different ways, and you know, there's so much data, it can become a bit overwhelming. This is certainly where some of the machine learning and AI capability that's out there can actually utilize all of that data and react to all of the customer signals, but not sort of net it down into something that's a bit more actionable and achievable. So maybe, you know, creating an affinity score. So using all of the data within the platform, but turning it into, this is my likelihood to buy into each of my categories. This is my next best category. And then ultimately building audiences off the back of that. So we're certainly saying that to get the full value out of a platform, you know, it's not just having all of the data in there, but then having those tools that sit on top of it that enable you to benefit from that wide range of data. And I suppose just building on from that then is, when you have the audience, it should be really easy to then push it out into the touch points. So the activation capability should, you know, you shouldn't be spending time creating files and pushing it around to lots of different platforms. It should all be connected. So ultimately, from the point of the analysis and insight, if you see a segment within your reporting or your dashboards that are really interesting, you should be able to turn that into an audience and get it out into the touch point. It shouldn't be, oh no, we have to wait another 2 weeks to react to that because, you know, the insight is out of date at that point in time. So it's going back to that single source of the truth with all of the different I suppose use cases tapping into it, but working in tandem so that you can react quickly to the signals and the trends that we're seeing in the data.
Sorry, Stuart, that's a really good point, and actually I didn't think of scalability is probably the biggest issue if you're looking at even in audience building and with that, and again this will lead into personalization and content when we get to the next. I don't want to jump the gun, but scalability and automation are the two things, especially as we move into this new AI world. And I think it's the biggest barrier with audiences is it's okay to create 100 audiences, but then do you have are you able to activate that quickly? And resource then becomes a bigger issue. So it's a really interesting point, scaling the scalability of audiences.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think scalability then is a nice segue into the third point around personalization. We can't talk about activation without lasering in for a couple of minutes on this key element. I mean, it's a use case that marketers have been chasing for years now. And I think many brands would put their hand up and say it's probably still not quite where it needs to be. Our feeling is, there are lots of reasons for that. I think, people struggle to develop content to keep up with personalization, and I think that's where generative AI, as Graham alluded to, could ultimately become really, really interesting and important. But even before then, being able to use data correctly and in the right way to deliver the assets that you need to personalize. And I guess many businesses are on a journey. Would you agree with that, Steve?
Yeah, I mean, and the business I've worked for, some are quite far along on that journey, some not so. At Crew at the moment, we're dipping our toes in. We know that it's a journey, and we want to get to that destination of that kind of one-to-one personalization, whatever that might look like. But we're doing it. We've started it in some channels, and we're going to bring it onto our site soon, based on some of the clever modeling that we're doing with you guys at Plink. So I think, yeah, personalization again is an interesting one because I've alluded to this before. I always say your channels and your personalization is almost like the trailer to a film, right? It gets you to wherever you need to go, but then actually wherever you are, that needs to be consistent with how you got there. And that's not always the case. You can see some businesses doing some amazing personalization with some of their touch points, but actually then when you drop on the site or you go into the store, it's not the same experience. So it's personalization has to be consistent across the board if you do it correctly, which again, there's nuances to that, and we could talk about scalability again, and how agile you can be, and how quickly you can do that. But for me, yeah, personalization, getting to that point, and we really want to do it at Crew because we know it's the right thing for us to do in terms of keeping customers, fostering these relationships, creating this loyalty that's not driven by kind of discounting, but actually what our proposition is, is super important to us, and we know personalization is going to be one of the key factors in us being able to foster those relationships.
Yeah, I mean, I love that analogy around the movie trailer and to the film itself. And I think, Graham, that links to something that we talk a lot about that we think brands should expect the data platform to enable and deliver, and that is things like on-site personalization. It's something that can be connected directly to that fit for purpose data asset.
You know, 100%, and I think it obviously puts a lot of requirements on the underlying data platform. On one hand, when we were talking about the analysis and insight, we're potentially looking back over a number of years worth of data to gain trends and understanding about our customers. And then on the other hand, we do need to enable this consistent message when somebody lands on the site. The data platform should be capable of providing the relevant information on the history of the customer, so that if they've just received maybe that day a particular email off the back of an audience that you built, maybe they've then gone on at home in the evening and browsed to the site, and not necessarily clicking through from the email, but we should still be able to deliver similar content to join up that message, so that the data platform's got to be able to do that. But ultimately, The other element of it is, well, it's great that, that message may have brought you there, but if the mission that they're on is then very different, we cannot keep putting a message in front of them that they're not interested in. So not only does it need to be able to bring in the historical data, but it does need to be able to react to the real-time context as well. So that puts a very, a lot of requirements on the data platform to literally, as you're browsing the site, be able to consume and make decisions off the data. And that's more and more now where, that's sort of the expectation is that a customer data platform is able to do both.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you. So I think we want to now move on to looking at what needs to happen under the bonnet to make all this happen. We've talked about the three key use cases. We talked about what good looks like. So I think it'd be good to look at what technically marketers should be expecting to make this happen. Before I do that, I just wanted to try a quick poll. So I'm just going to launch a quick question for attendees to answer. So just thinking about your own biggest focus areas, what are the biggest ones for, what is the biggest area for optimization for you as a marketeer? So thinking about what's driving your needs, is it analysis and insight? So more of the right customer insight delivered faster? Is audience optimization the key play? So more intelligent targeting for improved response rates, long-term engagement? Or is it personalization? So being able to deliver one-to-one experiences to optimize engagement, channel revenue, and offer targeting. I'll just give that a second more to run to allow more attendees to address. And it's looking like the analysis and insight is coming out as the clear winner, which is interesting. I'd say in the conversations that we're having, the ability to access data and draw the insight is indeed the number one conversation, probably not far behind personalization. So that's a very interesting insight. Okay. So just going back to the conversation, I'm just going to quickly share my screen one more time. So we've talked about our three key use cases. I think what's quite interesting is looking beyond marketing, there are other key benefits and other key plays that businesses are looking to meet and to get to using that 360 view. I think we've touched on AI readiness. I think the idea of a tech deficit is a big deal right now. So brands with a lot of point solutions, a lot of technology that are being underutilized or aren't being used for the right thing, they can be turbocharged and re-enabled with the right data platform feeding into it. I think the concept of hybrid retail, Stephen, you touched on this a little bit already about clicks and bricks retailers needing to create those joined up experiences on and offline, that needs to be powered by data. And I guess that leans into a convenience play, which is just as important for loyalty now as maybe overt loyalty propositions, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's and I don't know if any of the participants on today's webinar are bricks and mortar as well, but if they are, they'll understand kind of how hard it is to join that data together, and just especially if you don't have it in one place. I think that bricks and mortar, the offline to online is the easiest way to call it. Joining that data together is so rich when it can be done correctly, and when it's not, you're actually missing so much of customer experience, customer lifestyle, engagement data. There's just so much missing that it is an important part of kind of, and it was definitely one that Crew undertook when they were thinking of a CDP, that joining that offline to online.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's move the conversation on then. So that's what we're looking to achieve and what good looks like. How do we make it happen? What are the key lookouts? If I'm a marketeer and I'm thinking about fixing that data foundation, I'm looking for a solution, I'm thinking about a CDP, RFP, I'm looking to brief internal resource to get the data asset where it needs to be to drive all these great use cases. In the middle there, if that's the continuous 360 view, I think we've pulled out, well, for the purposes of today's conversation, nine areas, of which I think we'll focus on a few, but nine things that brands should have front of mind when they're assessing their options and thinking about what good looks like and what fixing really means. And I think, Graham, maybe I'll come to you first on this, and maybe starting at the start, thinking about what does a fixed data asset have going into it? What are the key data sources, and what does connectivity look like? I'll stop sharing screen at this point just so we can see each other.
No problem. Yeah, no. Absolutely. I think we had touched on this previously, but certainly starting with the digital data tends to be the first port of call. So what by that we mean streaming all of the browse data in. I mean, we talk of that is anonymous data as well. So we want to benefit from every session that happens on your web or your app platform because there are insights to be gained from that. And obviously a subset of that will be matchable to known individuals. And within that we'll pick up any online purchase. So that tends to be the starting point. But quite quickly after that, we need to be completing that picture from the transactional perspective and actually bringing in the retail, so the in-store sales as well. So that's sort of normally the start, but then it's those additional dimensions. I think one of the questions obviously was that was asked previously was around product data. So whether it's product store or even content data as well, what marketing content do you have available? Can we actually bring the metadata into the platform so that we can start maximizing the use of that as well? So those sources that are not necessarily customer data sources, but we feel are really important to enhance the platform so that you can really solve those, certainly those analysis and insight use cases. And then, it's an ever-changing and an ever-evolving piece, the data sources we bring in. So channel engagement data, acquisition sources you came from through to email engagement, any other sources you have there. And then moving through, so product reviews, complaint data. Some of the data sources as well that might be more unique to your business, just because not every business has that entity doesn't mean that your customer data platform shouldn't model and use it. We're a big believer in the uniqueness of a customer's, end-to-end experience from a customer experience perspective, and as such, the data that you bring into the platform should really reflect that as well. So that's probably a high level view of the different sources.
So we've got, if I kept track of that, we've got offline data, we've got offline transactions, online digital behavior, we've got email or channel response data, we've got, I guess, any of the loyalty cards or store cards, third party data, product data, customer response, satisfaction, competitions. I mean, that feels, as we know, when I say it feels, it is apparently a lot of work for an internal team to manage. And I think one big lookout when brands go about assessing their capability and if they're looking at bringing on a third party perhaps to support them is, what is the bandwidth of IT resource to be able to support that development? I think you hear a lot of stories in the market about a product costing X, which is fine, but then actually the internal resource to implement that, deliver that is Y and quite sizable. I guess there's brands looking out for how to mitigate that or navigate around that. I mean, perhaps before we go into the solution, Graham, Stephen, from your perspective, just thinking about retail generally, I mean, IT resource is at a premium and probably never has been more so, right? They're not just sat around waiting to support marketeers.
No, absolutely. And I think it goes back to the point you made at the beginning, which is return on investment as well. I think it's hard to put a value to something you don't have in a business straight away. And there's also talking about halo effects of having a CDP. It's not just a marketing tool, and I think it gets sold as one as a return on investment. There's other things that a CDP can do in terms of driving efficiencies. I know we've talked about automation and scalability and all these things, and I think it's important that it kind of gets sold as that rather than just this kind of it does one thing. If you sit in a room, especially with IT, there's generally they've got a workload, they've got a roadmap that they've got to follow by the end of the year, and where does this fit into it? So it's almost about understanding where the kind of impact it can have on a business, and then speaking to IT and stakeholders, and then coming back to it. So yeah, I mean, IT is, like, you're 100% right. At the moment, it's a complete premium. So it's just almost selling that bigger picture of what a CDP can do rather than it just being a marketing tool per se.
So there's raising the profile of the business case and making sure the brand understands the full value. But then I guess, Graham, what should brands be thinking about when working with a partner or a supplier to do the most it can to mitigate that resource demand and probably, barrier, frankly?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of platforms out there, and they work in very different ways, but certainly some of the core things around minimizing that effort. So in terms of how you can get data into the platform, you should have lots of different options available to you. Can you send it by API? Can it consume files? Can it connect to an existing database and pull data out? Having a breadth of different integration options mean that, again, depending on the particular source, you don't have to create something new. But certainly one of the other elements is actually, and it sort of plays a little bit as well into the uniqueness of your data, which is, can it take the data in the raw format? So what you tend to find is that the effort that's put on IT departments is it's one thing creating connection to be able to send data into a data platform, but then if there's lots of requirements on you must shape your data in this particular way so that our CDP can use it, that's where a lot of the effort goes. So there are platforms out there where that rather than putting the emphasis on, the client IT department to do that shaping, they will just accept the data in whatever raw format it is, and then within the CDP it will actually undertake that. So for me, that's a really big one in terms of, ultimately you've reduced then the IT effort to the minimum that it can be. If there are system-to-system integrations as well, so if you're using some of the sort of the standard channel platforms, for example, out there, then actually having out-of-the-box connectors rather than having to even get IT involved, again, can be a very good way of fast-tracking that. And ultimately, then it all comes down to that flexible data model. So if you're going to bring all of that data in its unique form, then what we need to have is the CDP, the platform, being able to model it in such a way that it matches your business as well. So not having that standard data model and being able to adapt to the specific business itself, really. So yeah, those are certainly some things to be looking out for, and sort of ways that you can reduce the effort on internal IT and development teams.
So it's looking for bringing in as much data as possible from a source perspective, but making sure it happens in as flexible a way as possible. And brand really should be expecting partners to operate in that model. So I guess it's reducing the transformation required client side to put the data into a platform in the first place. That's where the bottleneck can be.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately removing the requirement on the transformation, I think, if you really want to push it, that is how you will minimize the effort. And then that does certainly, that starts to segment up the different platforms because some are capable of doing that, and many others are not.
And on the flexibility side of it, so I think this is really important. I think marketers should expect flexibility, from suppliers in this day and age. How far does that extend? So we've talked about the use cases. We've got analysis and insight. We've got personalization, and before that, audience optimization. So we've got the analysis side of it, and we've got the activation element. How can that flexibility extend in the way that a solution is configured for a brand to enable both those use cases? Because historically, they've been seen as being quite separate, right? So what needs to happen to make sure that that can all happen in one place? Because that feels way more efficient ultimately.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, from an insights perspective, I mean, anybody that's on the call, of you, everybody's ordering process is unique. We've worked with businesses where there's 10 different systems that manage from an order being placed on the website through to it actually being delivered to the customer. And from an insight perspective, you need the data to be able to align to your internal reporting. So everybody will report in a particular way. And that's where the flexible data model is key, because it needs to be able to model the data and the KPIs to match those merch reports, Steve, that you'd talked about previously that the business is already expected to see. But then by having it all in that one place, the same data should then be made available to deliver ultimately your audience building as well. So it's not an aggregated view that is being generated. It is a full view of all of your data, such that when the segment within the report that you see is interesting, you can actually build an audience off the back of it. So that flexible data model is being able to adapt to that unique process, but still load all of the data so that you can delve right down into the individuals and create audiences off the back of it.
And it
Okay,
goes back
so
to that single point, sorry, Stuart, that single
that's
point of truth, doesn't it, at the top level? If
mm.
all the data is all in one place and everyone's looking at it for whatever it might be, from a marketing point of view, a merch point of view, a logistics point of view, when people are sitting in a room, there's not three different figures or three different metrics that are completely different to each other, because that straight away you kind of lose the significance of what you're trying to say. straight off the bat. So it is almost having that kind of that single point of truth across the business.
And that's a fantastic segue into my next question for you, Graham, actually. Great point. How do you get the truth? So we're saying that brands should expect to be able to onboard all the data from all the different data sources. There shouldn't be any limitations. It should be onboarded in a way that it's super flexible and right for them. It should be designed in a way to enable both insight and activation. Then you've got the point where you're matching the data together to create that true view of the customer, the truth, which is what we're all getting for. What do brands have to look out for in this element?
Yeah, so again, it's obviously going back to my original point. I think everybody's process is different. Everybody's systems are different. So you need a level of flexibility to be able to join these systems together. It's not rather than forcing a brand to try and adapt their data into a particular model, it's having matching algorithms that can run across it that exploit the uniquenesses of their systems. So, you know, as an example, you might have some in-store retail data, and assuming you're allowed to do it, you may have some stored that masked debit cards, for example, and that can be a really interesting way of identifying individuals within stores for particular purposes. And, you know, having the flexibility to do that is very different than simply making sure that you always have an email address field attached to every single record. The same thing happens on site, where as soon as somebody starts browsing and a session is created, we can be collecting information about that unknown individual. And it may well be that sits around for a while. And, you know, in a month from now, that individual creates an account, and we can then attribute all of the historical data back to that individual. So we have that full view. So again, having that flexibility from a digital perspective to be able to retrospectively match data based on the specifics of your business. And ultimately, all of this needs to be happening whilst thinking about that latency as well. So having different concepts of a customer is key. So when you do, you know, your platform should enable you, when you want to run a report on a particular product, to understand all transactions, irrespective of we know the customer or not. But if you're targeting from an email perspective, you know, the profile that we're then resolving our audiences to is a smaller subset, which is the known individuals. So and I think that's the really key element, is that, you know, the platform should be capable of having multiple versions of a customer profile at the same time. So it's not just we only have data relating to an email address. It's we can have data relating to an email address, but we can also have data relating to an anonymous cookie. And at some point in the future, those two may merge or not. And I think that is a key thing to look out for, that it is possible to have multiple profiles at once.
I mean, it feels like this might be a nuance that goes under the radar somewhat, you know, for the marketer just looking to deliver fantastic email campaigns and an end product. But that the devil is in the detail, and it feels like we just keep coming back to this notion of flexibility. Marketers today should be expecting flexibility when building out everything, even for that thing that is the deepest under the bonnet that ultimately powers everything they're looking to do. The more nuance that is retained in how data is matched together, the more nuanced and relevant. I mean, that's the irony, right? We talked about this before. We talk about marketers looking to deliver relevancy and, you know, personalization and tailored experiences. That's what almost needs to happen when a solution is configured. It needs to be configured to the uniqueness of the brand. And I guess flexibility then might come into my final question in this area. We talked about the number of data sources we'd expect to come into the platform. So the kind of the breadth of the data. What about the depth? I mean, Stephen, from your perspective, you know, you're running analysis and insight for a wide number of departments in the business. I guess you need to go quite far back in a customer's history to be able to extract the insight you need. It's not enough to have a few months worth of data in there. You need the actual history, right? If you're looking at seasonality or lifetime value.
Yeah, we do. And well, there's kind of two ways to look at it when you're looking at kind of the depth of the data. We do have kind of enforced a data retention policy because of GDPR, and there's some data that we don't need to keep, but you do need to have at least 4 or 5 years minimum to run the models that we're running currently with you guys at Plink. For analysis, it's always good. Seasonality especially, I mean, with COVID being the outlier, you can get some really interesting insight, and we've done some great work around seasonality actually, and the change in our customer mix and our demographic and our geographic when we're starting to look at kind of different seasons and getting a better understanding of our base essentially. I mean, it's that question, how much data is too much? But then you have to go back to the other question, and why are you storing it? For what reason? So, I mean, GDPR did obviously change kind of the way we do, especially people that worked in the data sector, or the way we did look at data. But I think, yeah, you do need at least 4 or 5 years worth of data to run meaningful models.
And Graham, how can marketeers demand that? Because it feels like some platforms might restrict that in some ways, or that, how can marketeers get that point across? And I guess also bring that level in without compromising on the other activation elements, right? There shouldn't be a balance.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, it's having that platform that can still handle the real-time context, but at the same time is capable of having, these larger historical periods. I mean, I'm not, hopefully there'll never be another COVID period again, but when that happened, if you were running on a 1 year's worth of data, as your shops were shut for a while, all of a sudden the value of your platform is degrading. And I'm sure everybody was scrambling to keep as much data in there. If you were in one of those platforms where it maybe is only holding 6 months of data, or even a year's worth of data, it was like, no, we need to get that extended, we need to get it extended. But that's there's probably there's actually some specific use cases just around seasonality that a marketer can probably use. So, for example, if you're targeting in the clothing world, if you have multiple seasons, and if you're wanting to, the way that I buy clothes in the winter is different to what I buy in the summer. So therefore, when it comes back to the next season, we need to be looking back at what I did last year just to be able to provide some context to the type of winter clothing shopper that I would be. So as a result, just having 6 months, 3 months of data in that does not solve that one particular use case. And you will often hear, there's a workaround. You can go to, you can bring that data in, you can import it from another platform. We're not trying to create two platforms. It should be one version of the truth. And I think that simple use case of looking back at the, what a customer did last year, and really questioning, can I use that data to activate and personalize while still run reporting off the back of it? And if that if you can't, then for me it's not meeting that basic requirement really. So yeah, I think that's some
But
specific use cases.
crucially, all while balancing with latency, because we talked earlier about how infrequently many databases were being updated, which is just not fit for purpose. So being able to have all that in and just making sure that it updates as quickly as brands need, and directly power the real-time experiences, like all in one at one spot.
Absolutely. And I think, the advent of cloud technology, and it is capable to have a single platform now that is able to do both. It needs to be using a lot of the modern technology. So from a real-time and latency perspective, we need serverless processing. These are all of the things that happen under the bonnet. But at the same time, being able to, benefit from the large, the big data, the massive data, whatever we call it, capability that's there. I think without getting into the super technical details of it, the advent of cloud computing has ultimately meant that this is now possible, and it is possible to have a single platform that can do both. And I guess it's just different options that are out there in the market. Some of them will be more mature and up to and potentially up to date, and others maybe are not tapping into that capability. But I think the key learning is, certainly it is possible to achieve both, and it's cloud computing ultimately that facilitates that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've got, if we're talking about what marketers should expect and what they should look out for, it's bring that there should be no limit on the data sources going in. There should be within reason and data retention policy allowing no limit to the amount of data going in at a customer level. It should be designed in a way that is almost removes internal IT resource. And I guess then that future proofs it as well, right? Because if it's built to not need as much IT interaction, then as new propositions come in, new brands emerge, new product lines, whatever it might be, it can adapt and evolve with the business. There's the importance of the flexible data, so being able to align it to insight and activation use cases, being able to match it to create the nuance of the customer in the way that's right for the business. And then there's being able to, yeah, use that full customer history, but without attention existing then with latency. Like it's you the best of both worlds exists, and marketers should be thinking about how to achieve that. That's great. Thank you very much. I'm just conscious of time. There's just one more slide I wanted to bring up before we see if we got a couple of minutes left for questions. The big question around ROI. So all of this sounds like a lot of work, but brands are up against it when it comes to showing the ability on return to drive return on investment right now. And we believe that there is a use case by use case approach. We think this can be done in very concise, nicely defined packages of work. And if you take, for example, the use cases of personalization and audience and optimization, marketers are ultimately looking to get to a point where they can activate data to drive returns, improve channel response rates, drive more revenue, show the return on investment. And we think there's a story that brands can build up. And I think if you think about activate and predict, a great example might be a machine learning model like Next Best Category, the category affinity model that we've rolled out for a number of our clients, which predicts each customer's likelihood to buy in each of the categories that a business has. That drives email personalization. It drives email audience optimization. We see it driving increase in email response rates by 20%. It can improve audience efficiencies by around 50%. To get that up and running, brands could start thinking about their journey on looking at onboarding and matching digital transactions and behaviors. So prioritizing those data sets at the outset can help start driving that momentum. And then the machine learning model can be built around that. So it's quite a focused development area. Then over time, as results start coming in and the marketer can show the business case, we can start enriching that data set by bringing in offline transactions. That optimizes the model. It grows the volume of communications that this type of machine learning can target. So now we've got offline data matched to online data. That feels like a good point to start diversifying. So marketers can start accessing that data because those are the key data sources to drive insight and analysis. So it's all about enabling marketers to access it, but it's also broadening channels. So we've been using that category affinity, next best category model to drive email optimization. Let's use it for DM, pay media, website, build up additional use cases. We're building up more value. We're building up more of a business case. And then we can start bringing in the external, the other data sources, acquisition source, channel engagement, product data, whatever it might be. Then we start unlocking segmentation, additional AI opportunities. We can start really driving first that we're driving that customer first agenda. So we're increasing value. We're delivering value iteratively. We're improving that data foundation. We're increasing its maturity over time, and we're broadening its impact across the business as we increasingly democratize it and access it. And this is just one idea. It's one approach, but it feels like it's the type of approach that marketeers who are under pressure to demonstrate ROI and avoid tech deficit that they could be approaching. So we're just shy of time here. If any of this resonated, and I hope you all found it interesting, a couple of ways to learn more. Please reach out to the email address at the bottom of the screen there if you would like a demo of Unalyze, our customer data platform. We can show its reporting and insight capabilities, how it unlocks real-time personalization. If you just want more of a view of the market and just a discussion around your objectives and some of the challenges, then do reach out and book a discovery call with our experts. We can talk through some of our work, provide some recommendations on how some data issues could be fixed, and maybe directions of travel for RFP processes. But yes, please do reach out for more information. And with that, I think we're just about out of time. Stephen, thank you very much indeed for joining us.
No problem.
Been hugely interesting learning about your experience and views on this area. Thank you, Graham. Thank you very much for all the attendees. Do reach out if you would like to learn more. And we'll hope to see you soon on our next webinar. Thank you again, Stephen. Thank you, Graham.